A happy family devouring a picture-perfect meal, a perfectly picked and wrapped surprise under a tree, a romantic kiss at midnight. The holidays bring with them high expectations and sometimes epic failures. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, tales of holiday horrors told by Iowa storytellers in front of a live audience in downtown Iowa City. We'll hear about a Yom Kippur spent isolated from family with a clueless classmate, a romantic New Year's Eve that started with very high expectations, a Thanksgiving spent in a crowded store, a Valentine's Day gesture gone awry, and a cozy Christmas morning interrupted. Join us for the stories after the news.
It's a lot of women just coming out, you know, and expressing themselves about what happened to them.
I really hope the Me Too movement is propelling us in that direction where assaulting people has consequences.
I think it's important that we listen to all of the women that are coming out and telling their stories and work on how we can engage them in a healing process.
The Me Too movement has led many people to share their experiences with sexual harassment and sexual assault. It has sparked conversations and controversy and maybe even change. I'm Charity Nebbe. Look for Unsettled, Mapping Me Too, a new podcast from Iowa Public Radio in the iTunes Store and on Google Play, or find it at iowapublicradio.org. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The holiday season is upon us, and while we may have an idealized image of what these special celebrations should be like, the reality is often very different and, at least in retrospect, pretty funny. This hour, tales of holiday horrors as told to a live audience at Merge in downtown Iowa City. The event was put together by Iowa Watch, the Iowa Center for Public Affairs Journalism, and I kicked the evening off with a holiday horror story of my own. I want to tell you about my grandma. My grandma loved Christmas. She loved Christmas. And before you start thinking about keepsake ornaments or handmade gifts or cutout cookies or homemade pumpkin pie, my grandma was not that kind of grandma. In fact, the only pumpkin pie I ever saw her make was pre-made by Mrs. Smith, frozen and put in a box. And that's a life choice I can respect. But I'll tell you a little bit more about my grandma. So you get a little bit of flavor of Grandma Priscilla, my mother's mother. For example, when we would get to their house, we were always greeted by a big, wet, lipsticky kiss, always on the lips, no matter how old we got. And then for the female members of the family, after the kiss, there would be the moment of judgment, where she would take a step back and look at us and tell us what she thought about what we looked like. So, for example, through the 80s, I wore a lot of big clothing, as most of us did in the 80s, and she would look and say, "Oh, Charity, that is awful. You should wear something that shows your shape. You have such a cute little shape." Or, during puberty, there was a notable occasion where my grandma looked at my grandpa and said, "Oh, Glenn, look at her. She's getting quite the little bosom, isn't she?" Which is exactly what a 12-year-old wants to hear from her grandmother. As I got older, there would often be the, "Looks like you've put on a few pounds." Or the super complimentary, "You know, Charity, you could be a New York model if you just had a nose job." So, and I was her favorite, so you can imagine the things she said to the other members of my family. So returning to the holiday season, you know how we have high expectations, we get excited for Christmas, we kind of want it to be perfect. There's some stress, there's some tension. You bring families together, you put them in an enclosed space where they're held captive for a couple of days at a time. People start picking fights. Things happen. Well, that's what my grandma loved about Christmas. You may have a person in your family that's a little bit of a pot stirrer or picks some of the fights, but
My grandma planned to pick fights. She prepared all year long. She had these little pocket calendars, you know, the kind they're very small, businesses hand them out free, at least they used to, and they have little squares on them. Throughout the year, she would keep a record of every single time a member of the family called her, every time we visited, every time a thank you card was sent or not sent, every gift that was received. And so Christmas was kind of a natural time, being at the end of the year, for the reckoning, the moment where we'd look back over the year and see how poorly we performed as family members. And there was really no respite for our family because my mom was an only child. So we were it. My mom, my dad, my two older brothers, and me. And you might think, when you think about only children, as maybe a little bit spoiled, doted upon, seen through rose-colored glasses. Again, my grandma was not that kind of mom. So my mother, my kind, caring, intelligent, successful mother, could do nothing right in her parents' eyes. And the worst thing that she ever did was marry my kind, loving, supporting dad. And they made their dislike of my dad very clear, very early on. On my parents' wedding day, for example, my grandpa repeatedly referred to my dad by his older and, in their eyes, more desirable brother's name. Throughout my entire life, I remember my grandma introducing my mom to eligible bachelors, outright suggesting that a divorce might be a good idea. And then the most legendary moment, this happened before I was born, was when my grandma tried to physically throw my dad down the basement stairs. My little tiny grandma shoving as hard as she could against my 6'5" dad. She did not have the leverage to make that happen. But emotionally, she had a lot of leverage. She was a big woman emotionally. And the holidays just gave her such a wonderful opportunity for emotional blackmail and to set up these fun little booby traps. But one thing that she loved was coming up with ideas for presents. She spent a lot of time thinking about presents and preparing for Christmas. And she did a lot of communicating through her gifts. So for the first 13 years of my parents' marriage, she never gave my dad a present. And so my dad would very sweetly and politely sit and watch my mom open presents. And then after my brothers were born, you know, watch the kids open presents. And I got older and grandma and grandpa decided that I was better than my brothers. So they would sit and watch me open presents. But they would get some things. I just always got a lot more. And then after 13 years of marriage, I was the designated family elf. I would pass out the presents. There was a package underneath the tree for my dad. So I delivered it to my dad, and he opened it up, and it was a hard hat. My dad was a stockbroker. This hard hat was not new. It had been left behind in their garage by a contractor who'd done some tuck pointing for their foundation. And I can still hear my grandma's wicked little giggle when he opened up that box. And clearly she enjoyed this experience, because ever after, my dad had a package under the tree. The next year, he opened it up, and it was a golf shirt, which is really nice, right? My dad loves golf. So it was nearly his size, and it was a pretty high-quality shirt. And it only had one cigarette burn in it. And we learned that in that case, they had done their shopping at the Lost and Found at the country club. And I think Grandma really reached her zenith of presents. At least the one that tickled her the most was the year that there was a big box for my dad. And I delivered it to him, and he opened it up. And it was full of paper napkins that she had stolen from fast food restaurants. So, you know, if you think about it, if it's the thought that counts, she put a lot of thought into those presents. And, you know, she passed away about 20 years ago now, and she never succeeded in breaking up my parents' marriage. And in spite of many, many threats, she didn't write any of us out of the will. And there has not been a Christmas that has gone past that we have not shared a lot of laughter and joy over stories about Grandma Priscilla. So I guess she gave us the gift that keeps on giving.
Our next storyteller has a Thanksgiving tale. Nicole Tay is a University of Iowa student and vlogger.
At the Polo Ralph Lauren Factory Store, it's an outlet if you've been to Minnesota. It's huge and it's crazy. And there were 500 people waiting outside just trying to get in. And then in my earpiece, my manager tells me I'm the lead cash wrap. And I've been working for 3 years and I'm so excited. Like, I'm like, this is my moment. I get to be a leader and have all this power. And then I'm just doing my thing at the cash register, and then like midnight rolls around and I'm still going great, but then in my earpiece they tell me that they're gonna have a 5-minute meeting with all the managers and the security in the back, just for 5 minutes, so I'm in charge. And I'm like, I can do this, like 5 minutes and I get the power of the store. But the universe did not want me to have this power, you guys. I hear the loudest thud ever. I can see a woman hitting the glass door and falling to the ground. And I see another man bolting out of the store faster than Usain Bolt. And I'm just like, whoa. And then the whole store that had over 200 people inside and 200 people to get in waiting in line is silent. And then I run to this woman and I check her pulse and she has a pulse and I'm screaming, somebody call 911, somebody call 911. And nobody does anything. And then in the children's department, we have like really fabulous pieces of art, including this really cool gumball machine. And the kids knock that thing over, and the gumballs and the glass are everywhere. And the kids are, this is all within the 5 minutes that the managers were not on the floor and I had the power. What is going on? And then after my manager calls 911 because she has a pulse, the fire department and the ambulance are not going to get to us because they're responding to a house fire for 20 minutes. And we're like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? But then this woman like gets up out of the blue. Like, I can't even get up that fast. Like, just, she shoots up and we're like, oh my God. And then she falls back to the ground like 3 times. We're like, what is going on? And then the guy that I mentioned that ran like so fast, he comes back with 2 cups of water and he's like, I'm her husband. And I'm like, where have you been for 20 minutes? And he said, to get 2 cups of water. And then the woman is conscious and she says the most dramatic thing to her husband. She says, honey, I'm pregnant. And then he faints, you guys. Like, this is just madness. And I was just like, oh my God. And finally, the ambulance comes and removes the chaos from the store. And my favorite work blazer is stained with her nose blood and everything. And my manager, because of the initiative I took, bought me a new blazer. And I was so thankful for it. I was gonna wear it today, but I should have. But I am returning to Polo Ralph Lauren this Thanksgiving, so fingers crossed that the universe likes me. Thank you.
Storyteller Nicole Tay, you're listening to Holiday Horrors, a storytelling event held before a live audience in downtown Iowa City. We'll hear more stories in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're listening to tales of holiday horrors recorded at a live storytelling event held at Merge in downtown Iowa City, organized by Iowa Watch, the Iowa Center for Public Affairs Journalism. 4 more stories and a variety of holidays to come. Our next storyteller is Emma Baumgarten from Denver, Colorado. She is a senior at the University of Iowa, works in social media and events for Backpocket Brewing in Coralville, and her holiday horror story takes place on Yom Kippur.
Growing up, I was incredibly religiously Jewish. but I was also very culturally Jewish. And in Judaism, there are sects of Judaism the same way there are sects of Christianity. So the three main sects of Judaism are Orthodox Judaism, which are Hasidic Jews, Conservative Judaism, which is a little bit looser, Reform Judaism, which is pretty popular Judaism, and my branch of Judaism, the fourth branch, which is Reconstructionism. Reconstructionist Jews are kind of the hippie Jews. We're very peace, love, everyone is equal in God's eyes, we're all the chosen people. So some people would argue that we're not even Jewish, but based on the amount of Yiddish words that we use, I would say we are. So I grew up in this very Jewish family, going to synagogue every Saturday. I went to Hebrew school. I had my bat mitzvah. My whole family, on all of the holidays, we would always get together. It was very important. Friday nights are the Sabbath. We would always go over to my grandparents' house every Friday. And it wasn't about celebrating the Sabbath. It was about the tradition of going over. And my grandfather, who is the most religious of any member of my family and any person I've ever met, he does Torah study. He goes to synagogue without fail every Saturday. He doesn't believe in God. He changes all of the words in the Hebrew prayers that mean God to the power of love and energy and all of these hippie things, like I said, hippie Jews. But I got very used to going to synagogue and being around my Jewish family and all of my Jewish friends. I went to Jewish summer camp. And when I moved out to Iowa, I didn't realize how different it would be not living in a Jewish community. And it was weird. It was very weird. And if you talk to my friends, I'm sure they would tell you I talk about being Jewish a lot because I feel like I have to remind myself that I'm Jewish because I'm never around other Jewish people and I never celebrate any Jewish holidays, really. Some people say that Hanukkah would be the most important Jewish holiday. Some people here might expect that. Hanukkah is actually the least important Jewish holiday. The three most important holidays are Rosh Hashanah, it's the Jewish New Year. 10 days later, you have Yom Kippur, that's the Day of Atonement. And then right around Easter time, you have Passover. So before I had moved out here, I had never spent a Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur away from my family. So I went to the Hillel House. The Hillel House is an organization on campus for Jewish students. It's very lovely, but it's very small. Not a lot of Jews in Iowa. I know, it's appalling. My freshman year roommate had never met a Jewish person before she met me, which was lovely. I love telling people about Judaism. I talk about it all the time. It's very much a part of who I am. So I went to the Hillel House, and I took a bus with them to the synagogue about 20 minutes away. It's a conservative synagogue, and it was weird because I am not a conservative Jew. And while it was lovely, it was nice to be surrounded by other Jews and nice to be reminded that there are other Jewish people out there in the world, it was different. It didn't feel right. And the point of celebrating the holidays for my family is to be with the family. So I talk to my family on the holidays, and I celebrate the holidays in the little ways that I can. But usually I'm in school, and I just keep going to school. So my sophomore year, after I had tried going to the Hillel House and tried going to the synagogue in Cedar Rapids, and it hadn't really worked out for me, I decided that I was just going to go to class on Yom Kippur. Now, Yom Kippur is arguably the most important Jewish holiday. Yom Kippur is the Day of Atonement. It's the day where you think about all of the things that you've done in the past year, and you say you're sorry for anything that you've done wrong, and you think about how you're going to be better in the coming year. And the idea, traditionally, is that the Book of Life is open on Rosh Hashanah, 10 days before Yom Kippur, on the Jewish New Year. And in order to get your name written in the Book of Life, to live out another year, you have to apologize for the things you've done wrong and think about the things you've done wrong. Now, I'm not saying I believe in the Book of Life, but it is very lovely to sit down and consider for a whole day the things that you've done wrong in the past year and say you're sorry for them and maybe call up a friend and consider how you can be better in the coming year. It's very lovely. And on this day, you fast so that you can focus on this process. And while this is an excused absence with the university, it's still an absence. And since I'm not going to synagogue, I might as well distract myself in class because I'm not eating. So I usually go to class. So my sophomore year, I went to class. And I should have known it was going to be a little bit rough because I get very hangry. And I sat next to this girl, and I should have been prepared for this, because this girl had asked me earlier, she was wearing like a Christmas sweater in September. And don't get me wrong, okay? Christmas is lovely, Christmas is fine, not my cup of tea. And it's a little bit harder for me when I'm here, because it's everywhere, and I don't really have a place to go back to that isn't Christmassy. So I was a little bitter when she wore this Christmas sweater in September, a few weeks before Yom Kippur. I had, you know, I sort of gave her a look, and she was like, "Well, don't you celebrate Christmas?" I was like, "No, I'm Jewish." She was like, "Not even as an American?" So I had to explain to this girl that Christmas is not an American holiday. And here I was on Yom Kippur fasting. It was like 4 p.m. On Yom Kippur, you fast from sundown to sundown. So from sundown the night before to sundown on Yom Kippur, and then you break the fast. My family, we always break the fast at my great aunt Phyllis's house, and we always eat bagels, and we have this great conversation about how we're going to be better in the coming year, and then my dad always falls asleep on the couch with his pants unzipped, and it's like a classic story. It's great. So I'm sitting here, I haven't broken the fast. I'm very hungry, and this girl is sitting next to me, and she sort of looks at me. She's like, "Are you grumpy? You look grumpy." So I explained to her, "Well, you know, I haven't eaten anything all day. It's Yom Kippur. It's the Day of Atonement. I'm fasting. I'm saying sorry for all the things I did wrong in the past year. But the university doesn't care, so I'm in class. But I haven't eaten anything." She goes, "Well, I have a banana. Do you want a banana?" "No, I'm fasting." She's like, "Well, why do you have to fast if Jesus died for your sins?" So I said, "Jesus died for your sins. I have to atone for mine every year, and it involves not eating." And she looked at me very seriously, and she said, "Well, if Jesus didn't die for your sins, then you're already going to hell. So eat the banana." And that was one of those moments where I had to remind myself that not everyone had the upbringing that I did. And I had to take the time to explain to this girl, after getting up and moving in the middle of lecture because I was done with her for the day, I came back the next week and I sat next to her and I talked to her about being Jewish and being different, and she genuinely had no idea what I was talking about. So it's been really interesting to live here and to be able to educate other people. But my favorite part of this story is that I called my grandfather to tell him. I said, "Grandpa, this girl told me that I'm going to hell." And he cleared his throat. He was like, "Well, did you tell her that Jews don't believe in hell, so you're probably fine?" These guys.
Storyteller Emma Baumgartner. You're listening to Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio, Tales of Holiday Horrors this hour. And our next storyteller is Randy Estes. He's from Fisher, Illinois, and his favorite holiday food is pecan pie. He has a New Year's Eve story to share.
I have my own personal secular iteration of being the C&E Christian. You know, the ones who attend church on Christmas and Easter and feel like they've met their religious and spiritual obligations for the year. But in my secular version, there are two dates out of every calendar year where I decide to become a Jehovah's Witness and refuse to acknowledge the holidays. These dates are February 14th and December 31st. These are the dates of every calendar year that the universe pronounces to single people, "You are alone." With February 14th in recent years being dubbed SAD, or Singles Awareness Day. Even professionally, I have a sketchy history with Valentine's Day. I used to be a florist. And yes, Valentine's Day is one of those chocolate, greeting card, flower holidays. But of the flower holidays, it was always the most difficult one to anticipate and prepare for. First, What day of the week does it fall on? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? Okay. Thursday, Friday? Great. Saturday or Sunday? Not so much. The men who send flowers, and let's face it, it is still primarily men who still send flowers on Valentine's Day, want to get the biggest bang for their buck so they can, well, later on, get the biggest bang for their buck. They want to send flowers to their Valentine at the workplace. They want the coworkers to see and to ooh and ah and be jealous and know what a great catch he is. Sending flowers to the home on the weekend just does not have the same cachet. And then, in the Midwest, mid-February is prime winter storm season. You have a snowstorm anywhere in the week preceding Valentine's Day, and it's going to impact getting your flowers to your shop and having inventory to sell. Have a storm on the 13th or 14th, and it's going to impact getting your deliveries out to the recipients in time. Lastly, there are roses, the flower of Valentine's Day. The growers and wholesalers know they have everybody where they want them, so they jack the prices up so exorbitantly that most retailers do not usually use the standard markup for flowers, thus affecting your bottom line profit margin. But all that aside, from a personal aspect, you know, if I had my druthers, I would prefer to have dates on February 14th and December 31st, as well as the other 363 days of the year. But it's not always been in the cards for me. In the summer of 2009, I was living in Chicago. One of my favorite summertime activities when I lived there was going to Hollywood Beach, or the Gay Beach, on Lake Michigan. It was only about a 10 or 15 minute walk from my apartment. One early summer Sunday, my friend Fran and I decided to go to the beach. Fran is quite the social butterfly. Everybody's stopping by to say hi and greet him and greet us, which was great. And then one of his friends, Jaime, stops by. Jaime was mighty fine. In fact, upon first glance, Jaime was two-thirds of my kryptonite trifecta. He was a brown-skinned Latino man with a very hairy body. I really didn't think he'd be interested in me. I knew that he was considerably younger than me, and it wasn't until our third date that I discovered that he was born the year I graduated high school. But things were really comfortable. It was easy. Nothing was forced, and we just had a great time together. And it was a reminder for me that age is nothing but a number. We got along well. Summer turned to autumn, turned to winter, and the holidays were approaching. And it hit me. For the first time in a long time, I'm going to have a date for New Year's Eve. So December 31st arrives, Jaime's in the kitchen cooking away. I'm in the living room preparing for a magical night where we're going to have our own fireworks for New Year's Eve. I get the coffee table from between the sofa and the fireplace and pull it away. I push the sofa further back against the opposite wall, making a big open space in the middle of the room. I have the air mattress, sleeping bag, blankets, quilts, and pillows. I am creating quite the den of iniquity. I mean romance. It's been a few years since I'd used the fireplace, so it needed to be cleaned up a little bit. So I open the flue, I get the fireplace poker, open the glass doors, open the screen mesh, and I'm there poking and prodding, trying to get the little trap door for the ashes and the remains from the last fire to fall into the little of the pit. When something drops from the chimney.
Oh my God, there's a dead squirrel!
Heretofore, I'd not seen Jaime move so quickly as he did running down the hallway from the kitchen to the living room with me to stare into the fireplace, looking at the long, gone, petrified, flattened corpse of a squirrel. How are you going to get it out? Get it out? Are you insane? This just became the squirrel crematorium. And so, ever so gingerly, with my fireplace poker, I shoved kindling and crumpled up newspaper underneath the fireplace grate. I got some logs, set them on top of the grate, on top of the squirrel, creating the funeral pyre. I get the long fireplace matches, light it, hold it as far away as I can, and get it just to the edge of the paper until the paper ignites. The kindling then takes over, takes flame, and it looks like that the logs are going to catch flame as well. I ceremoniously close the screen, close the glass doors, and we go back to the kitchen and dining room while Jaime finishes fixing dinner, and then we ate in relative silence. After about an hour, we creep back into the living room to assess the situation. We go in, the fire had burned pretty well, the logs were pretty well gone, so it was time to add some more logs to the fire. Upon closer inspection, there was no evidence of previously living fauna, animated fauna, in the fireplace. The fire had done its job. But still, dead squirrel dropping down from the fireplace is pretty much a buzzkill for romance. The evening was a bust. Jehovah's Witnesses, you've won me back. Let's go knock on some doors. Maybe a single gay, hirsute Latino man will answer. Thank you.
Storyteller Randy Estes. We've got two more holiday horror stories to come. We'll find out about a grand Valentine's Day gesture that went awry and a cozy Christmas morning interrupted. You're listening to Holiday Horror Stories on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're listening to stories about holiday horrors. This was recorded at a live storytelling event in downtown Iowa City, an event organized by Iowa Watch, the Iowa Center for Public Affairs Journalism. And our next story comes from Sarah McGurk from Freehold, New Jersey. She's an adjunct professor at the Magid Center and client relations manager for a web-based startup in Iowa City. Her favorite holiday food is pumpkin toffee pie. And although that sounds like Thanksgiving, her story is about Valentine's Day.
So I'm a poet. I write poems. I wear my heart on my sleeve all the time, right? I am a queer drag king. I'm all about theatrics, right? I love the big reveal. Anyone who's anyone goes to the Valentine's Day variety show. This is where things get real wild, okay? Now, typically, you do your Colby Kaye cover. You do your Jack Johnson cover. You come out to your loved one. You love them. You're in love. All this. The stakes were higher for me. Enter. Let's call her Kelsey. Now, Kelsey was a woman who could burp her ABCs. Sensual. She could tell you in grave detail about the anatomy of a newt. She was hot. So I was like, Valentine's Day, this is my moment, right? So my performance had to be not only seductive, not only sensual, it had to be epic, pyrotechnic, right? So I go where else? I go to the adult diaper aisle. The night of the show, lights up. What am I dressed in? I've got my full flesh-colored bodysuit. I've got my adult diaper, my wings, my bald cap, my bow and arrow. I'm baby Cupid. And my first mistake was not the outfit. The outfit was like killer, right? The first mistake was maybe the song choice, right? So I picked the most obnoxious song. Treasure, that is what you are. You guys love it, right? You're like, treasure. Okay, good. Lights up. The crowd's huge. Everyone I know is in the crowd. There she is, Kelsey. Hey, girl, right? I do my thing. 30 seconds in, my wings fall off. I lose my bow. It's all chill. The climax of the song is about to happen. Here's my plan. Out of my diaper, I pull my pink fuzzy handcuffs, okay? I jump off stage. I run toward Kelsey. And I go, and I'm like, I am gonna bind this girl to me forever in the fuzzy handcuffs, all this. So I go to bind her, but the lights are in my eyes. Who do I bind? Not Kelsey, right? The pink fuzzies fall upon the wrist of Professor Dudley. You can't make this up! Professor Dudley, my professor. She's 70 years old. She's an Austin scholar. Fantastic. Extremely incredible. Now, Dudley, I swear, when she was teaching, she loved to do this. She would teach in this position with a skirt so that you could see her floral bloomers. The whole class, you could see them. And she knew it. There's nothing else I can say about that. That's just how it was. And you had to sit in class and be like, yes, Mr. Darcy. And she's like, you can see her underwear. Anyway, so I got Dudley in tow. And I'm just like, okay, cool, she's good. And I'm like, well, the show's got to go on. I've got 2 more minutes left in the song. Here we go. And I grab Kelsey's hand, and now I got both ladies. They're like, great, let's go, ladies. And we bound up on stage. And I'm like, now's time for the big reveal, right? Of course, Valentine's Day. The striptease. Right? Horrible, horrible choices. So I have one hand, and I'm just like, gotta take the diaper off. Bum, 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 gotta take the diaper. And I really just can't do it, right? I got one hand, and Dudley's waggling over there. I'm just like, oh, God. And Dudley, great lady, right? Playa, she knows what's going down. Dudley is like, girl, I got you, in her head. And it's all nonverbal. And Dudley puts her little old lady pincers in my diaper, right? And she's trying to assist me. Finally, the diaper comes off. Now, this is the moment I've been waiting for. This is it. I planned this. I dreamed this. Here I am. I had these rainbow hot pants. And on the hot pants in Sharpie, it had written, Kelsey, be my Valentine. But here's the snafu. For audience distribution, I had also had not one, but 3 miniature boxes of chocolates. In my diaper. All right. Now, in the mayhem, in the chaos, I lost my wings, the lights were my eyes. I forgot about the chocolates. I just forgot. So yes, the chocolates jostled around, and they were all over. And yes, the chocolates melted. So to put you in my perspective again, old lady Dudley got my undies off, my diaper off, and I turned around, I was like, let me treasure you, right? And Kelsey's there, and she sees rainbow, her name, and then shit stains. So I'm gonna just leave you with a nice little resolution in all this. We'll just leave you with a resolution. Lesson 1, be really careful what you put in your diaper, right? Lesson 2, if you're the kind of person that loves the big gesture, split it up into little gestures. Make it a daily practice. Don't wait for the excuse of Valentine's Day. Don't wait until the bouquet is so overgrown and festering and heavy that it weighs your little Pooh Bear Christopher Hart down, right? In developing the story, I was talking to my girlfriend, and I was like, I need to apologize to you, miss. I should have told you that I was a hopeless romantic and a slut for gesture. This could have gone so south so many times. And she was like, Sarah, well, that's not how people approach each other. They don't just warn each other about all the shit that's going to go wrong, right? They act in accordance with how they're feeling. And then whoever's there with them is there with them, right? So she said, trust that I see you. Trust your language. get rid of the diapers. And for the love of God, you need to block Professor Dudley's number, because that woman is relentless. Thank you, guys.
Storyteller Sarah McGurk. You're listening to Holiday Horror Stories on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio, and our last storyteller is John Paul Derryberry, Executive Director of Family Promise of Linn County. His favorite holiday food, deviled eggs. And his tale is a Christmas tale.
There's some things that you need to know about my family before I kind of start this story. Is one, no one's ever going to make a Hallmark Christmas movie about our family. I mean, we love each other a lot. But the way that we show that is we mercifully put each other down all the time. The second thing is, like, my dad is, like, was like an old school man of principle, and like he was up for a job promotion, and really all he had to do was like go golfing for the job promotion. And my dad was like, you shouldn't have to golf for a promotion, I'm not going golfing. And then he didn't get the promotion, and my mom was like, why didn't you go golfing? He's like, I am a man of principle, I do not golf for money. And like, this was like the man that I grew up with. And principles are great and they're amazing until like they become a big roadblock in your life. And you're like, dad, shut up about your stupid principles and just bend the rules a little bit. And the third thing is our Christmases were filled with the same type of like principled rules and kind of not really showing that we love each other in the right way. And so Christmas morning when we unwrap gifts, instead of saying thank you, we find the person in the family who's not paying attention and whip the wrapping paper at their head as fast as we can. And so Christmas morning, like you're opening up a gift, it's like, oh, wow, cool, a sweet watch. And then like you're ducking wrapping paper that's flying over your head as fast as someone can throw it. Like this is our family tradition. And so I'm like 12, 13 years old. I can't quite remember when. It's Christmas morning and I'm super excited to wake up and open gifts. But again, my dad, this man of principle, this man's man, said, Christmas morning's not fun unless everyone's happy. I wake up at 8, that's when we open up gifts. So you can imagine like being a little kid and like staring at gifts from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. waiting for your dad to wake up, and you're just staring at him like, this is stupid, why won't he get up? This man's a jerk, I hate him, I don't care what's in here, I'm gonna kill him in his sleep. I wanna open up my gifts. And so this year I had a plan. And I was going to sneak into my dad's room and change his alarm clock. This is way before cell phones, so the alarm clock's just plugged into the wall. It's not connected to some fancy satellite. So you can change the time and the alarm on the alarm clock. So I was like, okay, mom, I'm going to do this. So everyone else in the family's up, and I am now in Operation Alarm Clock on Christmas morning. And it's a scary operation because my dad had defenses built in to not disturb him while he was sleeping. And it's the most effective defense system for a dad to have against his kids to make sure the kids don't come in the room real early. He slept naked. And so I did not want to like see my dad at all in that state. I don't think anyone wants to see their dad in that state. And my family was like cool with pranks if you pulled them off. But if you didn't pull them off, my dad put you in the armpit of terror. And it's, again, a highly effective move. He would take my face and he'd shove it in his armpit and then close his other arm, and he was a very large man, and you couldn't get out of this hold. So if you failed at the prank, you're in the armpit of terror, and you can't scream for help because if you open your mouth, it's armpit hair. And so then you're just chewing on armpit hair. And then if you breathe, it's an armpit, and we've all had smelly armpits. And so like you give up real quick, and then he goes, I win again, John. And so like I had to like be real stealthy with this whole thing. And so I am army crawling through my parents' floor with my eyes closed and opening them as quick as possible and shutting them again to make sure I don't see my dad at all through his bedroom. And I get to his alarm clock and I quietly pull it down. And I set it back an hour and I set the alarm and I put it back up. And so the alarm clock's going to go off. It's going to be 7 a.m. I'm going to get to open up gifts a whole hour before 8 a.m. And I'm going to pull one over on my dad. It's going to be amazing. And so the family's all sitting out and we're all quiet and we're all giggling about it. And then the alarm goes off. And he strolls through with this robe like it was the King of England's robe. And he's like strutting through the house of like, I did it again. I stayed asleep on Christmas morning at 8 a.m. Let me take my medication and we will we'll open up gifts. I'm only happy if everyone's happy on Christmas morning. And he goes into the kitchen to take his medication. And a couple years earlier, my dad had a really rough year with health. He had his aorta almost blew up to the point where he was like life flighted to the hospital. And when we talked to the emergency room doctors, they were like, "Your dad's lucky to be alive." And we're like, "Awesome, this is great. Like, we dodged a big, huge thing." And then 6 months later, he had a stroke. And so my dad had to take all these medications, and they were anti-seizure medications and those types of things. And so I'm proud of myself. I'm sitting in the living room staring at the gifts being like, "Oh, a whole hour early. This is so amazing." And I'm like, I pulled one over on my dad. I didn't see him naked, and I dodged the armpit of terror. Like, this is the best Christmas ever. So we're waiting for him to get his cup of coffee and take his, 75 pills he took every day. And we hear a thud on the floor. And we all go rushing into the kitchen. And my dad's having a seizure, which was very normal for my dad to have a seizure now. So, like, no one in the family was freaking out because, like, we've seen, like, probably, like, 10 of these over the years. But I'm sitting there watching my dad, like, thrashing around in a seizure on Christmas morning going, "Oh my God, this is my fault. I woke him up an hour early. I've ruined Christmas." And I'm just going through all these scenarios in my head of like, I'm a horrible human being. They should take the gifts away from me. And it's no longer funny. And I'm just so like, just want this to end because I just want a different view of my father than thrashing around on the floor Christmas morning. And so we get him settled. Everything's great. And he lays on the floor for like a half hour. And we finally get him up. We get him his coffee. We get him his medication. And we move him to his chair. And he's sitting there. And we're kind of waiting for him to give us the go-ahead that, hey, I'm with it enough to open up gifts. And this is like the crazy thing after someone has a seizure. Sometimes they come out of it and like they don't recognize what's going on. That's very scary for like a 12-year-old to like have your dad look at you and like, he doesn't really recognize me. And in my head, my dad's in that fog and he's looking at me, doesn't recognize me. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm the jerk that caused this. And so we get to opening up gifts and it's really solemn in the house. And no one's like jumping for joy. No one's throwing wads of paper at each other's heads. And like, we're like the normal Christmas family. We're like, "Oh, thank you so much for the sweater. I love it, Mom. Oh, John, that was a wonderful gift that you picked for me." And I'm like, who is this family? And so we're sitting there and I finally like give my dad a gift and he goes to open it and he stops for a second. And I'm like, "Everything okay?" And he looks at the clock. He goes, "Why does that clock say 7:50? And I go, "Oh, you just now noticed, huh, Dad?" And he goes, why does the clock say 7:50? And I start laughing. And then my brother starts laughing and my sister starts laughing. And he's like, "What did you jerks do?" And I'm like, "Well, I army crawled into your room. I set your alarm clock ahead. And now we got to open up gifts early." And so my dad's like fuming red now. And I'm laughing and like not paying attention to him. And so he goes quiet and we're all laughing and my dad finishes opening up his gift and he's like pretending like he's really mad. So like now I'm getting quiet of like, did I really like upset my father? Like, is he mad that I did this to him? And he's like, "Oh, like this is great. I think I got him a coffee mug." And he's like, "This is a cool coffee mug or whatever." I'm like, yeah, you're welcome or anything like that. And I go to turn to like talk to my mom. Wad of wrapping paper ear hold me. My dad threw it as hard as he could and he's laughing and it's finally Christmas as usual in our house and I didn't ruin Christmas and I pulled one over on my dad. Everything's back to normal and the 12-year-old in me goes, "Oh, everything's okay. Thank you."
Storyteller John Paul Derryberry. You've been listening to Holiday Horrors, a storytelling event recorded in front of a live audience at Merge in downtown Iowa City. The event was organized by Iowa Watch, the Iowa Center for Public Affairs Journalism. Our engineer was John Pemble, and the broadcast was produced by Emily Woodbury. A big thank you to Heather Spangler and the Foundations of Event Management class at the University of Iowa. And a big thank you to my grandma for all of the holiday horror stories to share in our family. Happy holidays, whatever and however you celebrate. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.